Coming up, if you ain't first to listen, you're last to listen. Let's shake and bake with Talladega Nights, and this is Most Extreme Podcast.
Welcome to the Most Extreme Podcast, where we discuss and analyze the enigma that is 2000s pop culture. I'm Alejandro Joaquin.
I'm Brett Ellison.
And I'm Jarrett Whitworth.
And today we are talking about the classic, would you call it classic?
Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely. Monumental.
Okay, monumental is another way.
This is the most important movie we've talked about yet.
Okay, yeah, that's a good way to put it. Not Spy Kids? Okay, he shakes his head on a podcast. Video, we don't have video yet.
Visual medium.
Yes. Yeah, Talladega Nights, the ballad of Ricky Bobby. Mm-hmm. Exciting. I know Jarrett's really excited. He's bouncing up and down on his seat. So this is really exciting.
Yeah.
So hopefully everyone's going to enjoy this episode.
That's right. And we have with us a special guest.
Who's barking those right now.
Dogs. Yeah.
Hang on. Let me pause this real quick.
Don't go away.
Most Extreme Podcast.
We'll be right back.
That's what the people want. The people want to hear the...
They do want to hear the
behind the scenes. Did we make a blooper?
Okay. Hey, we're back already.
We're back.
sorry, there was a little interruption.
Yeah. But we have a special guest with us, my older brother, Hunter Whitworth.
Hello.
Hunter, welcome.
Thank you for
another
having me.
Another sibling showdown. We did one with my brother.
Right. Elijah was here.
So very excited to have you here.
Excited to be here.
Yeah. It's exciting that we're talking about this. We did an Anchorman episode with our friend Josh Manley. Very glad that we did that one. So I'm cool that we're kind of doing the spiritual sequel of Anchorman, which is Talladega Nights, and seeing sort of your perspective on it. But what is sort of, I guess, your personal history with Talladega Nights? Do you have a personal history with this movie?
Well, we saw it in theaters as a family, I believe. But I remember being, I think, at a very good age, speaking of Anchorman, kind of that run of movies where Will Ferrell is a blank, you know, the kind of kicked off with Anchorman, and, you know, you've got Elf in there, you've got Will Ferrell in Talladega Nights, and then you've got the kind of the Will Ferrell appearing in these different, Will Ferrell was a big deal when these movies were coming out. And I was like at the very tail end of high school and early college when it was very, very formative, I think, for my sense of humor, Will Ferrell. Even going back to like the SNL cast that I remember most is growing up with Will Ferrell doing, you know, impressions of George W. Bush. And
yeah, no, yeah, for sure.
Constantly taking his shirt off and things.
And kind of goes, I think we mentioned this in the Anchorman one, where it was just that group of actors that were just all in everyone's movies all the time.
Mm-hmm. Right, starting with kind of old school and then going into Anchorman and then now this. And
so
then
there was
it's
like
kind
the 8 years where it's just like, basically, yeah, Will Ferrell just says, like, yeah, I'll be in your movie for 5 minutes. And so right. Just in everything. Everyone's in everyone's movie.
Right, even if it's like a small cameo.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true. Jarrett, what about you? I mean, did you see it in theaters with Hunter?
Yeah, as part of Hunter's family, I did.
Sat next to each other.
We did, yeah, we did see that. But it was a movie, like, I think we saw it in theaters, and it was probably a long time before I saw it again.
Okay.
But it always lived in my head as like, oh man, Talladega Nights. I remember, I knew I loved it and that was hilarious. But then it was like a while before I saw it again and then saw it again. It's got to be one of my favorite movies.
How old were you when you saw it first?
14.
14.
Yeah. Like, okay. I mean, I saw it.
Prime
when it
age
came out
for then, Will Ferrell comedies.
Gosh, yeah. Yes. And it's a staple movie for a good old fashioned wine night, if you want to. you get the boys together and you go to CVS and you get some $2 bottles of wine.
Hang on.
Old fashioned. The tradition that dates back.
Let's explain this one more time. So you get the boys together and you go to CVS.
Shout out Drew Robinson. Shout out Jonathan Hurls. Shout out Travis Linton. Yeah, yeah.
You go to CVS, the pharmacy, and get wine.
I had a woman behind the counter laugh at me when I just like put three bottles of like $1.50 wine. She was, gave me a look, and I said like, "It's fine. I'm not sad. This is for this is for the boys." A thing. And she said, "Oh, okay."
Was there like a Charlie Brown theme playing on the PA system?
I was wearing my, yeah, my yellow sweater with the black line through.
Wine down. Is medicine, in the opinion of...
It was for many years. It was cleaner than water.
Holier than water.
That's true, yeah.
Cleaner than water.
I had a creative writing professor that I emailed to say I wasn't feeling well, but I was sending him, you know, stories and whatnot to look at. And his recommendation to me was to drink a bottle of red wine. He said, you'll feel better.
Any other professor would not say that. That's a creative writing teacher right there.
Very much. But there are ways, you know, you watch it and it's every time they say shake and bake, which
is
really gets
lot.
You in that one scene. Anytime they say fast, you know.
So, kind of if so, a fun drinking game is to anytime they say shake and bake is to take a
little sip of that bottle.
Okay. Yeah. So, hey, if you're listening right now and you want to play a fun drinking game, every time we say shake and bake, just take a drink. Hopefully, you're not driving and drinking, but you know, some people listen to podcasts in different ways. Alejandro, what about you? How do you feel about this movie or personal history?
Must be 21 year old to play.
I had not seen this movie until a few days ago.
That's
with
right.
Brett.
Me too.
Blows my mind.
Yeah, which, both of us had not seen this movie.
Yeah. I mean, I saw Anchorman previously and Step Brothers when it came out when I was like, what, 11?
Part of the trilogy of Will Ferrell, Adam McKay comedies. Yeah. Yeah.
But
Will Ferrell is a stepbrother.
Great premise.
But yeah, so do you like it or how do you feel about it?
Yeah, I was not a fan of Will Ferrell for a long time just because of my dad.
Okay.
But then I started really watching it, and I feel like I'm a big fan of Will Ferrell just when he's paired with Adam McKay as a director, because I think Adam McKay really digs into that. The whole premise is just absurd.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not like a serious movie with funny jokes. Mm-hmm. It's more like the whole thing is just an absurdist comedy, and they just – go off to the races with that concept.
So let me ask you this. How do you feel about the movie Elf?
Elf. I have not seen it.
Okay.
Oh,
which I know is a sin, but I just went to the Scrap Exchange
Jared
a few days ago.
Walking out the door right now.
There are so many ways you could have said anything to be better than Jonathan.
Right. To quote our old host, Jonathan Snowdy, I'm not saying you're a bad person if you hate the movie Elf, but you're close.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But I bought a $2 copy from Scrap Exchange, the thrift store.
Oh, nice.
So I have
store movies.
And I'll watch it soon.
Christmas movies in the middle of
April. I'll get the boys together with
Hallmark
some wine.
Hallmark does that Christmas in July, right?
Christmas in July. Hallmark.
Christmas
and,
in July.
Most trailer parks. But yeah, I also just saw it for the first time with Alejandro, and I enjoyed it. Yeah, I think there's sort of a cultural context to this movie that we'll get to that, especially in North Carolina, if you've grown up with it, is sort of different. Because I think, to me, I always had sort of a distaste for that. And we can also talk about sort of NASCAR, that I've never really been a huge fan of NASCAR. It's not for me. I enjoy fast cars, but I've never really enjoyed everything else around it. So I'm not a huge,
Definitely
Carolina
its own
boy.
Culture.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that culture sort of just, I have distaste for, but after watching this movie, I think it's very funny. So how do you guys feel about NASCAR?
I don't think I've ever watched more than like 5 minutes of a race or highlights of a race or anything like that. But to your point of kind of North Carolina, I've always been impressed or sort of like proud of the fact that as a state we're like a fundamental state as far as like an entire culture, an entire sport.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so not that I watch it a lot or really care, but I just think it's cool. Like, hey, like we got this thing that we're in such like an important historical context to.
That's true. Yeah. And most of it, yeah, starting, cool. Yeah, up in like, was it Wilkesboro, like Yadkinville up there?
Sounds
that's like
right.
The heart of it, yeah. Mm-hmm. Hunter, what about you?
Well, yeah, I don't watch NASCAR. I have watched one NASCAR race in my lifetime, and it was not enough that I would ever want to watch it again. But the history of NASCAR is really, really fascinating. With as is most of what Reese Bobby says in the movie, you know, is always the truth. The man only speaks truth in the film. The history of the moonshiners putting, you know, ambulance engines into Cadillacs and outrunning cops through the woods. Is pretty exciting. And they had, I don't know if this is too in the weeds or anything, but apparently the fundamental sense of honor among the moonshiners was such that if they were caught, they would just allow themselves to be arrested. The police could say, well, we'll come get you tomorrow to take you to jail. And they're like, well, yep, you caught me. I'll be there. I'll be here. and they would just go along with. It was kind of a strict adherence to their own set of rules, I guess.
Men of honor.
But yeah,
I feel like if someone did say like, "Hey, I have a ticket to the Indy 500," you got to go just for like the spectacle of it. If you have a chance to do it, I feel like that would be a.
It's the same of just like going to pretty much any other cultural sport that you don't watch. Just be like, oh yeah, if I got to go to a, you know, a football match in England or something, like the cultural context of that is going to be so like the reason to go, that it's or like any
Kentucky
other country
Derby or
something. Maybe not that, but
I've driven by Talladega between Atlanta and Birmingham when I lived in Birmingham. And if you go by there while there is a race, it's
just traffic everywhere.
Wild. Yeah. I mean, it's and then it's just there's this an otherwise empty field is just full of campers and vans. And I mean, people set up camp there for like the week of the race, I think.
Gotcha.
Wow.
Do you like NASCAR?
Not really.
Well, we got that answer for you.
I don't just hate it, but I don't know.
It's you don't want to go fast?
I'm good. More into drag race style.
Okay. Yeah.
You know?
You live your life 1/4 mile at a time.
1/4 mile at a time.
Another extremely important film.
We better talk about Fast and Furious.
Oh, which one?
All of them that came out in our time frame.
So specifically Tokyo Drift?
I can talk about Tokyo.
Sigh. That's how I feel about it too. So this movie, how it got made is pretty easy. I mean, this is less history, but basically, if you listen to our Anchorman episode, we'll probably be getting some notes back from that. But essentially, Adam McKay, film director, and Will Ferrell, who teamed up through the Saturday Night Live days, kind of continued to do movies, especially after the success of Anchorman, got to pitch a second movie, discussed a film about doing NASCAR while they were filming Elf. And shortly after filming had completed, co-producer Jimmy Miller invited the two to a NASCAR race in Fontana, California, after which the two began initially writing the film. The two presented the idea to Sony only using the 6-word pitch, Will Ferrell is a NASCAR driver. So that's filling in the blank. But yeah, so NASCAR agreed to provide assistance to the film's production. And here's sort of the cultural context for us as North Carolinians doing in North Carolina, that much of the film was shot in North Carolina. And most of it being with 1 week of shooting occurring at the Talladega Speedway, while many of the races were normally filmed at the Charlotte Motor Speedway, where like the Coca-Cola 600 happens, and Concord, North Carolina. So the scenes were like Bobby's residences is like Lake Norman. If you don't know, like sort of the Charlotte area is kind of what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. So being able to watch this movie as a North Carolinian, it's very obvious at times. You're like, that's North Carolina. I can totally pick that out because I'm from here. I know where that is. So, yeah, Talladega Nights, the Ballad of Ricky Bobby was released in theaters August 4th, 2006, with a 71% on Rotten Tomatoes.
That's criminally low.
You think it's criminally low? I think that we hadn't gotten to the point where we had figured out that Will Ferrell was a movie star until, like, pretty much this movie had come out. Because he'd really only done maybe, like, 3 movies up to this point.
Right.
Yeah, or at least been, like, the star of them. So.
Right.
Anchorman, Elf, this, basically.
Yeah, and I think also people didn't get the absurdist comedy. Because I think that as comedy has changed, you know, throughout time and culture, that this one, getting that, like, absurdist stuff, and so many of, like, the payoffs of emotional climaxes just being jokes. Right. Like, that was not something I think people were used to. Which is interesting and revolutionary for this movie.
Before that, we just had, like, the airplane movies, I think.
Or Scary Movie was pretty popular. Mm-hmm. Or like American Pie or something where like, if I'm going to be a vulgar movie, that's like, that's the joke.
Yeah.
Rather than like a larger context going on.
I don't know if this is the appropriate place to ask this question, but Hunter and I were talking about an hour ago. Is this the most important movie that has ever been set in North Carolina?
No.
Not Last of the Mohicans?
Durham Bowl?
Bull Durham?
Bull Durham.
Iron Man 3? No, wait, that's...
Not filmed in North Carolina, okay, set in North Carolina.
Gets a good question.
Has to be Bull Durham.
Yeah.
I'm just putting the question out there. I'm not saying I have an answer.
Hey, if you have a question and you're not even from North Carolina, email us at Most Extreme Podcast. All of our listeners in France and Germany, let us know. One interesting thing I do want to talk about is that this movie came out in August of 2006. The Disney Pixar film Cars came out in June of 2006.
Oh.
So the summer of 2006, everyone was just into racing films. Like, we were all pumped for racing.
Did one of the Fast and Furious movies come out?
I was just about to look that up.
We'll talk about the box office near the end of the episode, but yeah, it's very interesting. And also, Hunter actually helped us out with our Mario Kart episode that we did last, 2 weeks ago, and we're continuing that trend into racing. Mm-hmm. So thank you for your help behind the scenes as well.
Tokyo Drift came out in 06.
Okay. Did it come out in the summer or come out?
It came out June 16th.
Wow. 2006. We are just all into racing in 2006.
That was a fast summer.
It was a fast summer.
I wonder if speeding tickets per capita shot up.
Oh, like how Jaws came out and everybody didn't go to the beach. Or like when the Italian Job came out, everyone bought a Mini Cooper.
Yeah.
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 So I want to be like Mark Wahlberg.
I don't want to be like
he's
Mark
in that
Wahlberg.
Movie. he's the guy. He's the main actor.
Marky Mark.
Unsung Ed Norton performance as well.
Mm.
Yeah. That's some interesting that you mentioned that up because that's a movie he was contractually obligated to be in because he signed something with Paramount and he had to be in it. So he was forced against his will to act in the Italian Job.
What did he sign the contract? It was like one for me kind of deal.
I think so. It was like he had to do it no matter what. So that's why I feel like he's good in the villain because he looks so pissed off the whole time
that he's there.
The more I feel like Edward Norton, a thing that I would never have thought about Edward Norton, I have learned in recent years, I think is true, is that he's just a grump all the time. Like I think I would never have pegged him as being angry and difficult to work with.
I know that his character that he plays in the movie Birdman is like based off of himself. Yeah. So he's basically playing a hyper version of himself. Birdman. Yeah.
I haven't seen Birdman.
Birdman is excellent.
It's very good. Film. Hey, let's talk about Talladega Nights real quick.
Wait, what? What's this podcast?
Should we talk about the comedy of the film? I know you have notes, Hunter.
I have some notes. Yeah. We don't have to get, I've got some in the weeds stuff.
Bring it out, man. Let's do it.
Well, part of what I was looking for when I rewatched it was North Carolina connections beyond just the film being filmed and set there,
right.
But kind of what North Carolina iconography. I was wondering if many of the, you know, products that were advertised on the race cars were based in North Carolina. Many of them are not. I learned, and that Laughing Clown malt liquor is not even a real thing.
The one where the racer goes, hey, this is good. You guys should eat this.
What about
Adam McKay?
What about Big Red?
Big Red?
If you don't chew Big Red, then.
Yeah. Big Red was actually, originates in Chicago.
A lot of listeners in Chicago. Thanks for listening, Chicago.
Country Crock Butter, owned by a company that was based in Detroit that then moved to the Netherlands. Fig Newtons, invented in Philadelphia, first mass produced for the first time in Massachusetts.
When does Fig Newton show up? Is it just like on the car?
Fig Newtons.
He puts it on the windshield.
That's right.
He's like, this is dangerous, but I do love Fig Newtons.
That's right.
Old Spice, Hoboken, New Jersey.
That's interesting kind of talking about how a lot of the comedy even comes from that sponsorship. Because I think I do have an interview with Adam McKay that was in the New York Times that sort of talks about that, corporate branding that's so like unique to NASCAR, even though we have it in all other sports. But he made an interview. I'm sorry, Washington Post where he said the most obvious thing was that interest them was the corporate sponsorship of NASCAR. I hadn't seen anything like it. Every single element of the sport had a sponsor. These guys were owned 30 different ways by different companies. Contrast that with the aura of individuality that's at the center of the sport. Mm. That all of it's like, you know, Dale Earnhardt Jr., Jeff Gordon, all these people who like, that's what they're all about. But yet everything they do is all about the corporate sponsorship.
And you have the note here about a thing that's always confused me is that it's teams, but individual as well. Like that's always kind of been an oddity or I guess a novelty of
right.
that sport.
And I think that's what they find the comedy in. Yeah. For example, like Wonder Bread being huge and Old Spice, and they were not charged at all for being directly sponsored in this movie, but yet they still have are corporations who are willing to like understand the joke of it all, which feels like that would not be made today in 2021, like a movie where we're like making fun of corporations and sponsorships without that being like, you know, a fake one. Because I'm not so
Wonder Bread, a product of Indiana.
Okay. So. Also shows up in the movie Sky High as Kurt Russell, a superhero eating Wonder Bread at one point.
Wow.
But yeah, this comes from RogerEbert.com, also going off of that corporate branding. The Bobbies live in a world where branding is everything and product placement infiltrates every aspect of their lives, which was sort of like how America was getting to in 2006, especially with like corporate sponsorships in a lot of television and media.
Mm-hmm. That afternoon lunch or dinner or whatever being basically just 9 different fast food restaurants.
Right. I've been slaving over this all day. Yeah. It's just like
Taco Bell, Burger King.
And one endorsement deal stipulates that Ricky Bobby has to mention Powerade in every grace, which might be the funniest scene in the movie. I think if you look up Talladega Nights on YouTube, this is like one of the first scenes and maybe probably the most improv heavy, like very funny scenes of the movie. But I think it stands out to me.
I love the way my kids are talking to you.
The story of Chip is one that I want. I want more.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
I want to know everything about Chip.
He was a man. Chip. He had a beard.
What's his, the chipmunk sees in the dark when Ricky Bobby's wife has left him.
Yeah.
And he's being kicked out of his own house, and Chip kind of leans into the frame and has this weird bit of folksy wisdom that, the way that it's in there, it's like he's saying something that has to do with the person getting their comeuppance, but it doesn't make any sense. It's like the bullfrog can hop, but the owl sees at night.
Oh, yeah. I do love that scene because it was like, you know, or John C. Reilly is like, yeah, I think we've had some hard times right now, but, you know, I want you to be at my wedding. I want you to be my best man.
It's like, you stole my wife.
You are marrying my wife. I will not be your best man.
Yeah, he still wants to be friends with him. There's a ton of deleted scenes for this movie, like a lot. And one of them is that, like, while Ricky Bobby's living at his mom's house, he gets, like, a phone call from John C. Reilly's character, and he's, like, in a hot tub, like, hey, man, you want to hang out? It's like, you're in my house. You've taken over my house. But, yeah, this is also going off of the Roger Ebert, not him, Jim Emerson is the guy who wrote it. The movie may be about dumb characters, but it's super smart about American sports, biopic movie conventions, and especially language. The writers, Will Ferrell and Adam McKay, and the actors are in love with the words, of how they sound, what they mean, especially when they don't mean very much at all. Mm-hmm. So that's very much going off of that absurdist, like, none of this really matters, but it's all done for comedy. Mm-hmm. And it's still, even that dinner scene is getting to the point of the movie, of that, like, I can be this huge person and I can have all this, like, feeling even up to my family, but I still have, like, insecurities deep inside that and my fears. As he tumbles into fake fire and, you know, thinking he's paralyzed.
I think also some of the element of the comedy in that they take the NASCAR so seriously. Mm-hmm. So it's not, you know, they're not.
They live and breathe NASCAR.
Yeah, and that's what makes it funny. And like if they were just making a joke about it, it wouldn't be as funny. That's the earnestness they take the NASCAR itself.
I have that interview from ESPN.com with Will Ferrell. And he said, we are really adamant up front that our goal was not to make fun of NASCAR, that we wanted to have fun with NASCAR. We are fascinated by this idea of the teammates, but also competing with each other.
Mm. I mean, in addition to that, I was reading about it that NASCAR actually like helped like kind of get the accuracy right, and even they even provided their own jokes, and even Judd Apatow was saying that some guy at NASCAR would pitch a better joke than we had, and we were embarrassed that they could ride cars and be funnier than us.
Right. There's several times like Dale Earnhardt Jr. shows up in this movie.
Yeah,
not a great actor, but he's in it.
Yeah,
it's like people like that will just show up, but it gives it sort of that essence of like, oh, this feels like. So
it's
like racing.
It's like realistic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think that's part of what makes the absurdity pop for me is that it's grounded in that way and something that's real in the same way that, you know, like the Muppet movie wouldn't be as good if Michael Caine wasn't taking everything so seriously.
Right.
He's talking to Kermit the Frog, but there's no winking at the fact that he's talking to Kermit the Frog. It's grounded in something real. And so you can kind of play the absurd elements off of each other.
Which you almost nowadays, you can't. It's hard to find a movie that doesn't wink at the audience in some capacity.
Right, because the fourth wall break, the Deadpool of how things have changed is like, you know, you get it, right?
Yeah.
This is ironic. We're being edgy. It's like, are you? We can talk about that as well. But I really feel like all good parody comes from a place of affection for the topic.
Mm-hmm.
Even if to be like satisfyingly critical, you have to have like some... Even movies I think are terrible, like, for example, like Sausage Party, which is a critique of animated films comes from a place of like, oh, we really like Pixar and stuff like that. Yeah. So things like that go into it. But we laugh at Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly and the rest of the cast, even though it's still a characterization of Southern generalizations. But it never comes off as like being utterly offensive.
Mm. Yeah. Because I was, when I was watching, I was looking how the characters never make jokes themselves. Mm-hmm. They never say something. The actual characters don't say anything expecting it to be funny. It's just them being themselves, but it's funny to us because they're so absurd in that.
Right.
And so that's what makes it really funny, because they're not delivering a line expecting for us to laugh.
Right.
They're just living their life.
They become the character.
Yeah. Yeah.
When Will Ferrell crashes a car through a house, he actually feels bad that he wasn't feeling it.
Right. You know? Right. Right.
I'm embarrassed.
But even the scenes like when they're like, I like to picture Jesus in like a t-shirt, like a tuxedo t-shirt. And then you can just kind of see the two of them like getting into it, like nodding their heads and about to like basically lose, break character completely. So, yeah.
One of the all-time great blooper reels.
That's true.
In front of the credits.
Mm. That is another sort of 2000s thing, is that we were talking about, is bloopers at the end of the movie. It's sort of like an after. I love it so much. The after dinner mint, the fortune cookie you get at the end of the meal, of like, we're going to leave you a little something while you're walking out of the theater to like put a smile on your face. Mm-hmm. And that just doesn't happen anymore. Yeah. I really want the comedies.
Or anything like that.
Doesn't happen in comedies either. It's very rare, but I think it needs to come back. Or even, as we said before, like the Pixar thing, where it's like, it's an animated movie, but they just made bloopers. So they were faking this whole time. Right. So as if they were shooting a movie, like a slate will show up in this. So that, I love that type of stuff as well.
I've got a game we can play.
Oh, sure.
So
let's play a game.
Yeah. So, I did some research and about kind of this time period where you could go into a studio and pitch Will Ferrell is a blank, and, you know, post Anchorman, post Talladega Nights, that's a viable thing if you have the right premise, right? You know, Will Ferrell at this point is bankable. I think he, when does, what's the movie where he is a character in a book?
Stranger Than Fiction.
Stranger Than Fiction. When did Stranger Than Fiction
I think that out? Came out that's in 2005. Time, that's also, Stranger Than Fiction is a mixture of like a comedy and dramedy, and it's sort of also at the peak where I think he did like a Woody Allen film. So he's sort of like, after a lot of SNL stars get that way where they're like, oh, I see this person as a viable star, so I'll try to put them in other stuff and see what ticks. And it feels like Adam McKay was like one of the only people, maybe because Will Ferrell's also writing the movies, that he gets to it. This also came out in 2006, November, so a few months after Talladega Nights. Right.
Amazing. So
also 73% on Rotten Tomatoes.
It's a good movie. I like Stranger Than Fiction.
Check it out, y'all.
Better Stranger than Talladega Nights on Rotten Tomatoes
by 2%.
That's absurd. Sorry,
well,
continue.
Just well, like, so I have four Will Ferrell is a blank movie pitches.
Okay.
Okay.
And it is up to y'all to decide whether they are real or not.
Okay.
Whether the pitch was actually
whether made. Is this an actual movie that was pitched in the height of Ferrell mania. Or is it something that I made up?
Let's bring it on.
You know, all of these movies have, you know, Anchorman has the legend of Ron Burgundy. Talladega Nights is the ballad of Ricky Bobby. There was also this big kind of subtitle with
the blank of blank.
These all follow that pattern as well.
Hit it.
So, number one, Return of the Diamond, the epic of Rick Diamond. The pitch is Will Ferrell is a professional wrestler. He is old, he's aged, past retirement. He is brought back in by a promoter that he used to work for, who thinks that he can milk one last run at the top out of his stardom before he fades off into the sunset. Will Ferrell, the wrestler, who was unsatisfied with the way that his career ended, but knows full well that his body cannot take another long-term turn in the wrestling industry, risks it to try to prove to his family that he can be a success.
What was the name of the title, real quick?
Return of the Diamond.
Return of the Diamond.
The epic of Rick Diamond.
Okay.
Another
I'm not going to Google any of this.
Another North Carolina connection as well. Ric Flair.
Okay.
Charlotte area legend.
My shoes cost more than your house.
Are we deciding as a group if it's true or false? Or
it's like bluff the listener on Wait, Don't Tell Me. We have to guess which one is the right story.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not like we're keeping score of our own.
Okay, we're coming as a group. Do you want to? You're going down.
What did you have in mind?
Go.
You guys would say just whether or not you thought it was real, and then I would.
Okay. I don't think that's real.
No, I don't think that's real either, because it seems like if that came around around the same time, which we'll get into it soon as well, my favorite movie of all time, Nacho Libre, also came out in this same summer as 2006. So that would be like, that sounds a little too same.
I mean, I was going to say the other way. I was going to say that it might be more believable because since that Nacho Libre, it's kind of like a little bit bankable.
The wrestler. Okay.
We could hold on to this idea. Yeah. We can't get Will Ferrell, but what about this other guy, Jack Black? That's what you're thinking.
I don't know.
I'm sticking with false though.
I'm gonna say false as well.
I'll follow the grain. I'll put false.
Return of the Diamond is not real.
Mm. Yeah.
So nailed it. Job, one for one.
I knew it.
I knew it the whole time.
I knew it the whole
lesson time. Learned. Acquiesce to the majority.
Number two, Grave Endeavors, the tale of Scud Tatum. Will Ferrell.
I think Jarrett knows the answer already, but I'm not sure.
Scud Tatum is an amazing.
Will Ferrell is a ghost hunter. That's the pitch.
Yes.
And so, Will Ferrell, ghost hunter, is attempting to win back his estranged son, and prove to him that he actually does have a paranormal sensitivity that he had been, perhaps exaggerating to kind of make, become a viable, TV star within that ghost hunter sub show. I think one of the ghost hunter shows that started around then. And so I think they were trying to capitalize on the popularity of that. And then it's set in West Virginia. And over the course of his adventure, he tries to win back his estranged son by bringing him to their ancestral home to prove that not only is it haunted, but that their family bears an inescapable connection to the Mothman.
The Mothman.
I feel like this is too absurd to be that it can't be fake. Mm. And also, I feel like also ghost, like reality TV, like ghost shows were so big around this time.
Like hunting Bigfoot.
The hunting, paranormal.
Like, well, cable television trying to fill it with something. So they're like, well, reality TV doesn't cost much to make. Well, let's do that.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say, I think it's real.
I can buy it.
I could see
Slash would see the movie.
Oh, slash, I would absolutely see that. Yeah.
If not, we need to make this.
Yeah. We'll call him up right now.
I would see it as well, but unfortunately.
Oh, it's also that's a good idea.
Not real.
Good dish.
Not real.
That's a good idea.
So.
You said you had four of these?
I have four of these.
Okay.
Number three, I Did a Rad, The Chronicle of Wolf Jones. Will Ferrell is a dog sled racer. Will Ferrell has to
I guarantee this is real.
Will Ferrell has to take part in the famous Iditarod sled race. This is set at the early 1900s. He has to take medicine from Nome to Juno. And the reason, it was ultimately too similar to the movie Balto.
I was gonna say
Call of the Wild
or the Snow Dogs movie with Cuba Gooding Jr.
Snow Dogs.
What is what was that? The one with the puppies?
Snow Buddies. Yeah, like Air Buddies. Yeah,
I think it was Snow Buddies.
Yeah,
I think it's real.
That could be. I'm gonna say it's not real. I don't know. I don't think it's real.
I don't think anyone would pitch that at that time.
I don't know.
I don't know.
So two not reals and a real.
Yeah.
It's not real.
Come on!
I knew it.
Booyah!
Unbelievable.
I got the most points, baby. And Alejandro.
Yep.
And so then, Jared's going down.
I guess so.
Number four is The Day No One Died, The Saga of Death, which is actually a remake of a episode of The Twilight Zone from the relaunch of The Twilight Zone.
The where, Forest Whitaker one?
Whoa.
Yeah. Okay. And this, so this episode actually starred Jason Alexander as Death.
Oh.
Who is so burned out on how depressing his job is.
I can't kill anybody, Jerry.
it's Jason Alexander trying really, taking a serious turn as a depressed being not content with his role in the universe, takes a day off, and a doctor spends the episode trying to convince him that not allowing people to die is causing more pain than he is by letting people die, because the hospitals fill up with people who are gravely injured but can't. Right.
That's the episode of the Twilight Zone.
They were gonna remake it with Will Ferrell. Well, and the pitch is Will Ferrell is the Angel of Death,
and this would be like a comedy. But
it was deemed too melancholy to be a viable comedy, and the premise was deemed too absurd to be a viable drama. Even though by that point, Ferrell had flexed his dramatic muscles in Stranger Than Fiction.
Mm-hmm. So it's not like he's luring people into the hot tub at the Welshley Arms. No. And once they dip their toes in, they all die.
Were they trying to make this a drama, or are they trying to make it a comedy?
It was going to be a drama. It was going to be a drama. Okay. But it was kind of the same formula that they... what was that movie called? Everything Must Go.
Mm. Oh, right.
I saw that. That was pretty good.
What would the title be?
The Day No One Died.
The Day No One
The Saga Died. Of Death.
I'm going to say it's not real.
Oh, you think he's pulling up?
You just make up four movies and bring them.
That is what I did.
Yes! Woo! I did it!
None of them are real.
I think these are good
pitches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's make all of them.
Let's make all of them in a row.
I'd be down.
That sounds
Take
awesome.
Brachiosaurus.
Yeah.
The Brachiosaurus Extended Universe.
The Brachiverse.
The Brachiverse.
Which we sort of have.
The DCU.
Yeah, should we talk about sort of the cast a little bit and like sort of their parts? Because I feel like Will Ferrell, especially when he's like the one writing the movies, I feel like he shines the most. Because I know we've talked about this on our Anchorman episode, is that now that he's not – that Adam McKay has also been doing more like The Big Short and Vice, and he's doing that huge movie with like a million actors.
Oh, yeah, Leo DiCaprio.
Is that the one that's – gonna be on Netflix?
Is it called Don't Look Down?
Don't Look Up.
Don't Look Up.
Don't Look Up.
Yeah, the one that's... It's
you
got like
about this?
No.
Okay, it's a new movie.
Throw it out, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Don't Look Up actually just finished shooting a few days ago. So
Hunter, when you hear who's in this movie, it's like a must watch.
Yeah.
So Don't Look Up is directed by Adam McKay. The movie is about a story of two low-level astronomers who must go to a... I said that completely wrong. I'm sorry. Astronomers.
Low-level.
Okay. The two has two low-level astronomers who must go on a giant media tour to warn mankind of an approaching comet that will destroy Earth. So think still comedy, but also more in the lines of like The Big Short, where it's like, we've got some drama in there, but we're throwing some comedy as well. The cast is Leonardo DiCaprio, Timothy Chalamet, Jennifer Lawrence,
the boy,
Chris Evans, Kate Blanchett, Jonah Hill, Meryl Streep, Ron Perlman, Matthew Perry, Mark Rylance, Ariana Grande, Hamish Patel, Kid Cudi.
Whoa.
That's at least like five Oscar winners.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I think.
So hopefully we'll see it coming out soon.
I have a question. Who is Timothy Chalamet?
The boy. Have you seen that? The what's the name?
The Steve Carell one?
No.
It's on SNL, right?
There's a... Oh, what's his name? He's the comedian. This is great content. He's the
Pete
comedian.
Davidson?
No. Who does... he was the writer for all the Stefan skits.
Oh, that's John Mulaney.
John Mulaney has a bit about Timothy Chalamet, about his wife telling him that Timothy Chalamet is an inch taller than him, and that he says, I just internalized it, and then he's just mad about it for a couple days, and then
who is that? That's not how he's famous.
Timothy Chalamet is an actor. He was most known for being in Lady Bird and the new Little Women with Greta Gerwig, and he also did Call Me By Your Name, and he's going to star in the new Dune movie with Denis Villeneuve.
He's going to be in the Wes Anderson French Dispatch.
Oh, yeah. that looks good.
Too.
So
I just see his name all the time.
I guess we'll have to have Timothy Chalamet on the show.
For being famous kind of people.
We'll bring him in just for you.
So y'all campaign for us if you're listening. Let's get Timothy Chalamet to come on the
show. I will know him as the guy from Don't Look Up because I'm watching this movie.
Friend of the Brackverse, Timothy Chalamet.
It'd be so fun to have him on. Okay. but yeah, so I think what he's doing with Ricky Bobby is one of maybe his best roles in all of cinema. I feel like a lot of people see him first as doing
Elf. Ron Burgundy.
Ron Burgundy first, or no, Buddy the Elf. Yeah, I think because that role he just more morphs into, and it's also more family. I think more people have also seen Elf because it's more family friendly.
Yeah, everyone has seen Elf,
and then like Ron Burgundy is also sort of his like alter ego, and then this one he's sort of being able to show all of his uniqueness with being able to just like the scene where the fake fire. Where he runs out of the car, which also, if you also notice,
save me, Oprah,
and Allah, and Tom Cruise. Jesus, Tom Cruise. And Tom Cruise, that he's—you can tell in North Carolina that they are filming this in the middle of like winter because NASCAR is normally not done until like the spring,
right.
And so seeing like them like all like their whoa, that they're like they're you can see like their breath is cold, and so like they had to have shot this and like. 3 o'clock in the morning,
yes,
in the middle of like the Charlotte Speedway, and then they go, "All right, do it again." Just like out in his tighty whities.
At least he was running.
Yeah, so I think that's just like the impressiveness of Will Ferrell is just like in that scene. I'm like, wow, they had to do this like a million times, and then do it again because he has the same thing happen when he drives.
He probably had like different takes where he just tried different things, and
oh yeah,
right,
yeah.
So. Any other thoughts?
No, I would agree with that. I think Ron Burgundy kind of becomes a parody of itself at a point. You know, I think that I get sick of the character Ron Burgundy in a way that I don't at any point in the movie of Ricky Bobby.
Yeah.
And you think it's after the fact that they've done an Anchorman 2 and then he's made appearances on Conan as Ron Burgundy and like he's done like I think it was on Sports Nation or something once.
There's a podcast that's just him as Ron Burgundy, right?
Right. Yeah.
Maybe it's Ron Burgundy.
It's probably
his overexposure.
Yeah. It's probably just so bankable that he has to do it all the time.
Right. It's every college dorm like has a poster of him.
But if you're going to like caricaturize a thing, the caricature that Ricky Bobby is, I think is funnier. For me, it's funnier than the caricature of Ron Burgundy.
Right, it's a little bit more absurdist, more ridiculous, more childlike. For example, like in the scene where Jean Picard or Sacha Baron Cohen's character shows up, and they're playing like I think it's like Charles Mingus or something, and then they're all like, "Hey, turn that crap off!"
Yeah, the jazz.
Like that would be the complete opposite of Ron Burgundy, who would have been like, "No, this is real music." And if you played like Brad Paisley, would have been like, "Turn this off." So
Ron Burgundy almost feels inhuman to me. I mean, he's pulling flutes out of his sleeve, and he's got all these talents that show up when they're needed. And Ricky Bobby feels more like a real person.
And also, like Anchorman, just has that one. Is it the first one or second one where they just fight? And it has like no effect to the plot
nothing to do with the movie.
It's just for jokes.
Like a Looney Tune.
Yeah.
So it's like it's great, but I think this one takes itself more seriously.
Sure.
Speaking of nothing to do with the movie, isn't there the scene where John C. Reilly calls Will Ferrell and it's like, "I think this place is haunted."
Yeah.
And he like hears a ghost or whatever. That actually plays into a theory that I have about the movie.
Okay.
We can get
into it. Go for it now.
Well, so I...
The multiverse.
I believe that you can make the case that Reese Bobby not only is an immortal being, but he is the Highlander. He is the Highlander.
So Ricky Bobby's dead?
Yes.
Got it.
Yeah.
Found a whole rat in my Cobb salad.
Thank you. You know nothing of his origins beyond the fact that he chose... The word chose is odd there, that he chooses the mom in a bathroom of a Rustler Steakhouse. You know, he's only ever referred to as shiftless and transient. He does not seem to age in the movie.
That is true.
You know, I believe that it is his mission. There's also, you know, the Highlander is an immortal being of the Scottish Highlands, and there's a huge connection from kind of Scottish Highland culture and mountains of North Carolina culture. I do not think it's inconceivable that the Highlander made his way from Scotland to the mountains of North Carolina. His mission is unchanged to see that there can only be one. I think that his mission is to make Will Ferrell, you know, a peaceful transition of Highlander power as opposed to beheading, but that all of his motivational philosophy for Ricky Bobby is to get him to see that the power is within himself. Which is why I think it's not a plot hole when he tells him that he was high when he said that you ain't first, you're last, and that it doesn't make sense. And but he also has the bumper sticker on his car that says you ain't first. He needs to take away that one last, false pillar that Ricky Bobby has built his life on to make him see that he is the one.
Hmm.
That's a very Reddit thread theory that I like.
Love it.
Now I'm not going to be able to see the movie the same way. Well, it's kind of going off of that, because there's this video by YouTuber Patrick H. Willems, which we talked about a little bit in our Anchorman episode. But to bring it back, he's basically talking about how Adam McKay is probably the best director at making smart, dumb movies, mm-hmm. where every movie he makes has a bigger picture and bigger statement going on, even mm-hmm. though all of it is being done just to make you laugh. So, for example, in this movie, it's with they set up very early on that Ricky Bobby sets away two tickets for his dad, and then it says like, that feels so bad for that guy. He sits to check us out. So that the emotional climax of the movie is he finally gets the tickets and then immediately turns around and starts to scalp the
tickets. I got two!
It's perfect. It's so perfect.
So that's perfect to smart, dumb comedies. That's probably why it was not so well received at the time, is that people were like, oh, what? You set that up? You're expecting them to like come together in some way, and they, even at the end of the race, like, well, must have been a good race. Like, it doesn't, there's no payoff with that bit at all.
Why don't you boys go dig a hole?
I bet y'all dig a hole.
I'll go get another beer. I think Reese Bobby is the best part of this movie.
Really?
I think it's...
I feel like, to me, personally, I feel like that's
he's
like...
He's batting 1,000 in the movie. Everything he does or says is funny.
I feel like the second half of that movie, where it's just him almost going, like, teaching him Miyagi style, is a little like... Just the jokes are funny, but I feel like the funnier part of that is Jane Lynch's character of his mom teaching their bratty kids to be like,
go to church,
obedient.
Grandfather, can't we resolve this issue conflict without anger? Oh my gosh!
I felt like she was the unsung hero of the movie on my last watch through. It was like, you really need
more Jane.
It really doesn't work without Jane Lynch.
What was that she's sort of serious the whole time, pretty much.
She's the moral center of.
What
the
was
movie
the first
and the
thing
Bobby.
That she was really in?
She Jane got Lynch. Big because of Glee.
Right.
But I think she'd done comedies and everything beforehand.
She was in Best in Show, which is a movie I have not
seen.
Yeah,
Christopher Guest movies. But. She's done a bunch of those. Leslie Gibb, who plays his wife, who's mostly known for being in the Iron Man movies, the first two. She's the reporter that Tony Stark sleeps with. Oh. Remember when Marvel movies had that in it?
Remember that. She was in The Fugitive also.
Oh, Jane Lynch?
Yeah, Jane Lynch is in The Fugitive. When Harrison Ford is in the hospital, I think she's like the guy, or the
guess what?
Doc that helps him.
Also shot in North Carolina.
That's right.
So
I haven't seen The Fugitive.
What?
Okay.
That's insane.
I know we're a 2000s podcast, but you didn't see the Quibi remake?
No.
Jared's on the floor.
Quibi.
Quibi. Jared left again.
Anyway, sorry, I didn't. I forgot. What was your point?
Oh, Leslie Gibb as the hot wife.
Yeah,
I think is really funny as well, because she gets a lot of time to show that she doesn't really care. Like when Ricky Bobby's in the hospital, she's like, "I decided to pull the plug." Yeah. It's like, "Oh, he's totally alive."
Yeah, that's our relationship was dying. No, it was not. I can honestly tell you, I did not realize
that. Yes.
What were you gonna say something earlier?
I was going to say that the Gary Cole and Jane Lynch are only 11 and 7 years older than Will Ferrell.
Oh.
Even though they
11
portrayed
and 7?
Yeah,
oh, wow.
Respectively.
Wow, man.
So
it's only... Maybe it really is Highlander.
Yeah.
That's wow.
But yeah.
That is wow.
I really think John C. Reilly is interesting in this movie because he... to me, as an actor, like, John C. Reilly is somebody who has some of the most variety of any actor, where it's like... Yeah. He's in a ton of comedies, and yet he's also like done like The Lobster, and he's also what are you doing?
No, I just have continue, and
he's be able to do what are some other comedies?
Sisters, Brothers.
Sister Brothers.
That's not a comedy, but that's
but he's done so
really
much.
Deep
he's Wreck-It Ralph, you know, and he's and
The River Wild. Anyone see that movie?
I don't think I've seen that movie.
That's pretty good.
But yeah, he's the fact that he's able to do like these really like. Absurdist comedies and yet also do all these dramas, and everybody I know likes working for him. He's also a beautiful musician. You should definitely check out his music. Mm-hmm. What were you gonna say?
I was gonna say, what about Michael Clarke Duncan,
who's
in this, and then also The Green Mile,
right? One of his final roles,
right.
And
Daredevil,
and
the Kingpin in Daredevil,
right? One of his final roles, Michael Clarke Duncan, which is interesting because he's known for being like in a lot of dramas, mm-hmm. and then one of his final films was doing like a comedy, which I think, yeah, the scene with him stabbing himself in the knife, that like improv that they're doing together, you can just tell that they're having such a blast. I mean, that shows up a lot in the bloopers too.
Try it out with this other knife.
Yeah,
that is, tell that there's a knife in that room.
Yeah, in a rehab center.
Yeah.
Oh man, I feel like the John C. Reilly is pretty good in this movie. Mm-hmm. But I don't. I think he works so well when they're together, him and Will Ferrell, that I feel like that's the parts where it shines the most.
Yeah, I was gonna say I feel like he was a little underutilized because I thought he was a bigger part before I watched it, mm-hmm. just from like the posters. But
and then they get they get bigger in Step Brothers. Like
yeah,
they get
this
two
was
of them,
before Step Brothers.
Yeah, then Step Brothers.
So that's where they really shine.
Yeah.
So I do have as part of promoting the movie, I do have two clips for you. This is from a rest in peace, Larry King live. This is that Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly in character, were promoting the movie in character as, Ricky Bobby.
Our guest here in Los Angeles, Ricky Bobby, the NASCAR legend, one of the all time winner of the Daytona 500, and Cal Naughton.
Still wearing their
the Dennett race.
Yes.
Okay. Mr. King, we just like to say it is an honor to be on our show. And Cal and I have watched you. I mean, we've watched your show all our lives.
I mean, you have guided us through the toughest of times of our generation. You and your entire family. BB King. You know, Martin Luther King. I mean, how can you measure the sound that the medieval knights make when they sword fight?
I feel like, does anybody do more of those in-character promos than Will Ferrell?
Pretty much it's him. Or like, yeah. I mean, Stephen Colbert. We're about to get to it. Sacha Baron Cohen does a ton of that stuff with his characters. And I have one more clip, which is that before the movie came out, they promoted themselves at the very famous 2006 MTV Movie Awards wearing their driver's outfits, going up. People hadn't even seen the movie yet, and they were pumped.
And they're saying shake and bake then, I guess. And right, yeah. And trailers. But.
So they didn't get paid, like, Wonder or Old Spice for them to just wear it. They just like, oh, we'll wear our costumes.
That is amazing.
Awesome. But yeah, so Sacha Baron Cohen, I do want to talk about him in this movie.
Yes,
as definitely. A villain. We actually watched it with subtitles, which I think helped with a lot of what he was saying.
Yeah, butter in your
mouth? You got peanut butter in your mouth?
This was actually his truly first on-screen acting debut, but do you know what his first movie appearance is?
Borat? No. Madagascar.
If you're saying that,
Madagascar as King Julian.
Whoa. Yeah.
Wow. Yep, so he's King Julian, everybody. The big thing to note is that this movie came out in August of 2006. Borat came out in November of 2006, so this had come out before. I don't know how many people would have saw that, because a lot of people did think that Borat was real for a little bit, and was like, oh, that guy's from Talladega Nights. Did anybody like notice that, or was he that good into character as Borat?
Mm-hmm. I've never seen Borat.
We'll probably have to hit it, because that's a big...
It's a big one.
Big one, for sure.
I mean, I know my wife.
Yeah, you know all that. You know, I like it. That's nice. It. Yeah, but a lot of his... All the promotion for Borat was in character, like going on to Letterman and stuff and messing with him and just jumping up and dancing and stuff like that. And so even like with being on like Regis... as character, and then has done it before with like doing Bruno and the Dictator and also getting kicked out of the Oscars as these characters, you know.
Yes.
I've got a theory about his character as well.
Hit it.
It's shorter, and that is that Jean Girard is descended from the Thénardiers, the innkeepers in Les Miserables.
I think I've heard this theory, but I'm not sure.
Is it real?
I don't know. I've heard people be like, oh, all his characters are actually connected.
Oh,
I've heard somebody about that, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, so the Thénardiers are, they have famously...
Master of the house.
Yeah. Parents of Eponine, they keep Cosette, extorters of what's Cosette's mom's name? Doesn't matter.
Fantine.
But they have, at the end of the novel, two of the Thénardiers go to America, but many of them die, but there's a couple that stay back in France, and it is not inconceivable that one of them eventually could give way to
one of them becomes a Formula One driver.
Would you like to be Mackie de Kirk?
You say, I love crepes.
I love those.
Those tiny little pancakes.
That whole bit where they're like, wait, no, I actually love them. No, you say it, but I love them.
What if I say,
I had some today.
I love tiny pancakes. Would that be a fair compromise?
That whole bit is very funny.
So funny. I love that part.
So I think the interesting thing, I did read another interview. This is the same one from Washington Post with Adam McKay saying, it's basically like, if you love NASCAR, you love the movie. And if you think NASCAR got sold out to corporate values, you're still going to love the movie. What he didn't predict was that both would coexist, because he felt like, oh, we were making a pretty big statement about, like, the Bush America of 2006 and, like, where we were in culture. Mm-hmm. And yet that both people can like it. That there's so many ways – like, in North Carolina, there's so many people who I know who love this movie but don't get the satire that it's doing. And then I know a lot of people who get the satire, but like, yeah, but I mean, it's kind of obvious. It's pretty accurate, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's an interesting kind of point that it's going to. And that people who are like, yeah, but it's not going to a place, like we said, like it's going to be offensive. All good parody goes to that place.
I mean, it's that part of like the characters, like taking themselves seriously, that it doesn't evolve into that area of just like making fun and mocking.
Absolutely. Because Gerard is totally justified in what he's doing, his own, you know, he has motivations, you know, he's not, you know, it would be easy to just make kind of a one-dimensional French driver, but there's a lot going on.
And is it Andy Richter from Conan who's his husband?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Dog trainer.
And then it's like, is that Elvis Costello and Mos Def? We're just sitting there. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Which is how you know that this movie does not take place in the same universe as Gilmore Girls, because Elvis Costello appears as a busker in Stars Hollow. And so if he's Elvis Costello in Talladega Nights, he cannot also be this fictional character.
He also shows up in 30 Rock, and then Jack reveals that he's actually an international art thief. And he's like, okay, you can't tell anybody. I'll do what you want. One interesting thing I did think about the movie, coming back to kind of North Carolina, is that there's a lot of beautiful shots in this movie. There's like a time lapse that's being done of the speedway and stuff. I think it's really cool. It's shot by a guy named Oliver Wood. And he goes on that very like kind of brighter saturation and stuff that goes in through all of Adam McKay's movies from this point, for like Step Brothers, The Other Guys, similar.
So good.
Because before Anchorman was shot on film, this is where we started getting on digital. And you're starting to get like that same kind of like visual language that's being done, starting with this movie and then going into other Adam McKay's films. Oliver Wood also is the guy who shot a lot of the original Bourne trilogy and like the Equalizer movies. So you're getting a lot of the like the race car stuff happening in this movie is very, you know, action heavy. And it gets really Michael Bayhem like when the cars start, you know, tumbling over each other. I do have one problem, which is that sometimes it was hard to keep track of which car I'm supposed to be watching. I'm like, oh, wait, who is he over there now? But I mean, Adam McKay calls himself more of a, you know, comedy director than he would an action.
Right.
Isn't Oliver Wood also the keeper for the Gryffindor Quidditch team?
I think you're right. I'm also a cinematographer.
Yeah.
Hey, good. Let's put a quarter in that jar for Harry Potter references.
Harry Potter references.
I was going to say, going back to Sacha Baron Cohen, when they're all, the three of them are introduced, like before the race starts, their first race, the Ricky and Cal were cheered because it was a real audience, a real NASCAR audience.
Right.
Then when Gerard was introduced as a driver from France with a Perrier car, everyone started booing unprompted.
Which is right, North Carolina, baby.
Speaks to North Carolina.
Yeah, freedom fries.
Freedom fries.
Hey, speaking of fries, you know where else you can get some fries? Over at one of the biggest corporate sponsors of this whole movie, Applebee's. That makes a lot of appearances. Mm. I do think the crash going for so long and then just an Applebee's commercial and then goes right back into it is
brilliant.
So funny. Mm-hmm. That's one of the bigger clips on YouTube. Just like, wait, what? It's a legit commercial? Oh, man.
Speaking of Applebee's, I guess this is a point I wanted to get to. It's just like, let's just share some Applebee's stories. Who's got them?
Okay. Anyone?
I can go first. I mean, I want to
basically... Hunter, Alejandro, anyone?
Yeah.
I'll go first because... Oh, nice. I've only been to Applebee's once.
Oh. So it was an experience, is what you're saying.
It was an experience.
2 days ago after you watched the movie.
2 days ago.
Gotta go.
And it was very uneventful, I must say. But the wings were good.
Applebee's wings.
Okay.
Applebee's missed wings. Out on the quesadilla burger.
Oh, my God. Oh, that's my story.
Oh, tell it.
Yeah, because I had a friend who worked for Applebee's as an accountant, so she got free food all the time and sometimes would give us the coupons for your free food. So I've only eaten Applebee's for free, and it's been twice, and I did get the quesadilla burger and then was sick the next day.
I went to Applebee's. There was a in college, there was a night that I play a karaoke. The only way to describe it is it's a karaoke barn that was close to close to Furman where I went. It was kind of a big Wednesday night, go to the barn, and then my friends and I, you know, the barn was initially kind of this alternative to going downtown, and then the barn kind of became a thing. And so our way of not of made keeping distance from whatever the thing was to then just go to Wednesday nights at Applebee's and get like Applebee's happy hour would have.
Didn't they have like an appetizer deal or something?
Real deals, yeah. You could get the $2 Long Island iced teas was the real
baby.
Was the real lure. But I also factor into Jarrett's Applebee's story.
That's right.
Yeah. All right.
So
go for it.
The hook to my story is like, y'all want to hear about the time I cried in Applebee's? but it's for good reason. No, I likewise. I didn't realize that Applebee's was like a joke until college. Genuinely enjoyed like it anytime I had gone. It wasn't like we always went Tuesday nights to Applebee's.
I feel like to me, it's always like Chili's is their slogan is we're not Applebee's. Like I always feel like that's a step up, but that's me.
No. Well, anyway, so and also like the quesadilla burger, that's what I would normally get at Applebee's and loved it.
Wow. Feel good. It's not good. It's basically just a burger with a tortilla. And then you go. Yeah.
It's imagine a quesadilla.
For people who
with
don't know what we're talking about.
Stuck inside of it.
When did you start going? Like,
well, I mean,
as a
younger,
kid.
Yeah. I mean,
okay.
Again, we wouldn't go all the time, but it was a place that we would go.
Your stomach got used to it.
So here we go. All right, here's the story. So it was a go-to place for like after the last night of the plays in high school.
Mm. Oh, okay.
And so after the first play I did in eighth grade, went to Applebee's and Hunter factors in because Hunter and one of his friends, Andrew, was there. And we sat at the table and just like the emotional high of like,
you know,
the final night of a play or things like that. And then we just had fun talking about like random crap, like crabs that have ram horns on them and stuff. Just having a good time. So that was great. So the next time, weeks later, we went to an Applebee's. I started getting choked up because I was thinking about the previous time in an Applebee's where it was like after such this like emotionally high moment of joy. And so I was like overwhelmed by like, thinking about the good old times. But yeah, no, I haven't been to Applebee's probably since high school.
Wow. Okay.
But
let's go tonight.
I did not realize that it was like a universally panned joke place. Hey. That's like Applebee's and Ricky Bobby. Like, that's hilarious.
Hey, have you also cried in Applebee's? Hashtag Applebee's tears.
Yeah.
Let's get Applebee's to sponsor us.
Yeah, and email us your crying stories. If you've cried before, email us. I guess sort of wrapping up, I did want to talk about, so this movie came out, of course, in August. The budget was $72 million. That was kind of big at the time. It opened at about 47, so not that great, but then worldwide made about $163 million. And I wanted to do sort of the summer of 2006, the box office for that. So kind of going off, we'll do the top. Okay, so 14, Monster House, if you remember that movie, written by Dan Harmon of Community. It's like the house is a monster, and it's like in a suburban neighborhood, so it's like eating people and stuff.
I was terrified.
It's really scary. But it's also like early mocap, like post the Polar Express, where it's like, we haven't figured this out yet. It's pretty uncanny valley.
Yeah.
Then we get You, Me, and Dupree, a movie directed by
Dupree.
No.
You?
No. the Russo brothers.
Oh.
Yeah. So that was before they'd got into doing like Arrested Development and Community before they even become, you know, Endgame. Nacho Libre at 12, my favorite movie of all time. That's also a lot of people, another beautiful movie, because it was shot in Mexico, just like these beautiful mountains, everything. It's like, oh, just watching like just wide shots, like this is a gorgeous movie. We'll have to do the Nacho Libre at some point. The Breakup with Vince Vaughn, Jennifer Aniston.
That's a fun movie.
Peyton Reed directed that one, who went on to do the Ant-Man movies, and also from the area, Raleigh. He's from Raleigh, so Peyton, thanks for listening.
So are you just trying to say, like, Marvel is just this amoeba absorbing from everybody?
2006 comedies.
2000, or number 10, The Devil Wears Prada, a movie I actually really like. Oh, wow. Because I would consider that, we've talked about with their Legally Blonde movies, where it's like a difference between a chick flick and a rom-com, where like Devil's Prada is a chick flick, but there's no romance in the movie, really. It's more of a chick flick than rom-com. Because it's all about, you know, a career and like owning up to being careered as a woman. Also, really good. Number 9, Mission Impossible 3, directed by J.J. Abrams. And one of the best Philip Seymour Hoffman performances ever. As the baddie in that movie. So if you guys haven't seen Mission Impossible 3 in a while, my favorite one of the whole series.
Really?
I think it rules. Go check it out. It's never
seen
very good.
When did the first... I haven't seen any Mission
Impossible. In like, 90, yeah. It was like 98, 97. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So they had slowly been coming out, and it wasn't only until recently that they were like, we're going to come out
every other year.
Right. But the stunts have only been elevated every year. But for a while, it was like a different director would do it. Like Brad Bird, who did The Incredibles, did 4. Mm-hmm. The one with the Dubai Tower.
Yeah.
Which, if you haven't seen the movie, you've seen that. You know what I'm talking about. Like Tom Cruise climbing the Burj Khalifa.
Oh,
with the
suction
cups.
And so, but now that they've got Christopher McQuarrie just kind of doing the whole series. 8 was Click. The Adam Sandler movie.
Which has a surprising amount of depth to that movie. I was shocked.
Really long. That movie is like 2.5 hours. It was actually nominated for an Oscar for best makeup, I think.
Wow.
So, yeah. Yeah, long movie. Not my favorite Adam Sandler movie at all, but...
But I wasn't expecting it to actually... It kind of actually takes a little bit more of a serious turn than I would have thought.
Yeah, right. That last part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That basically, because he can like rewind time or whatever, so it's almost like a... He rewinds and changes, or fast forwards.
A remote that can like control
stuff.
Time. Yeah,
and so it's like, oh, what would have, what could have been if I had just been like a better dad? Like that
oh
kind of stuff.
Man,
yeah,
right.
7 is Talladega Nights.
Okay.
6, Over the Hedge.
Yes.
Did you guys know that Over the Hedge is a comic strip?
No.
What? Yeah, it's still going. I believe it's like a comic strip, like
longest
Fox,
running anime, of
like
all time.
like Foxtrot or something like that, where it's and so it's the characters, so they made a movie out of that. So I had no clue that was based on something.
So good.
5 is Superman Returns. Terrible movie.
Oh, I was going to say underrated.
Oh, you like it?
Underrated.
Okay,
until the end.
Yeah.
When you have him moving an island made of kryptonite. That's no good.
I haven't seen it in a while, but I remember being bored for most of it.
It's not exciting. But I do like... I like Brandon Routh a lot. I think he does a good job.
He's good.
They do a good job of kind of addressing like a world that has moved on from Superman. And then when he brings the plane down into the baseball stadium and
I remember that scene.
And like the crowd doesn't know what to do. And then they just start clapping. I thought that was a good moment.
I definitely remember coming right off of Batman Begins and being like, that's not at all the same. Sort of with like The Dark Knight Rises, and then you get Man of Steel like the next year and you're like, but that's not the same.
Right.
Yeah.
The Da Vinci Code is number 4. I have not seen that movie, but going back to the MTV Movie Awards, Jessica Alba was the host, and there was a lot of jokes about the Da Vinci Code in it. It's like her and Jimmy Fallon, this is how old he was, like, he's also on SNL, like, going through, like, the Louvre and, like, trying to get the Mona Lisa. Mm. So, 3, X-Men The Last Stand. Terrible movie.
Not good.
Very bad. Brett Ratner sucks. Cannot direct movies. 2 is Cars.
Yes,
makes sense. You know, became the giant franchise that it is. Do you like Cars?
I've never seen Cars.
Really?
What?
How many people have not seen movies in this podcast? Goodness.
Cars.
No, I love Cars.
Really?
Yeah.
The first one?
Yeah. When I went, I got a complimentary blow up car.
What?
That, like chair.
I got a car.
Yeah.
Complimentary car.
Here's your Camaro.
Here's your sentient car.
Yes.
1, Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest. I think people forget how big that movie was. I remember it being everywhere, and like the only thing at summer camp people would talk about is Pirates of the Caribbean 2.
That That whole original trilogy was a
I think I saw it at midnight dressed like a pirate.
So interesting, because pirates were dead for a long time, like, right, and then in that, popular culture.
And then the first one comes out, Johnny Depp becomes a huge star. The first one's good. Yes. I don't hate Dead Man's Chest. I think it's good.
The other two are fine, yeah.
But it's not, yeah, it's not at all elevated. I haven't seen four or five.
No.
And I've heard Skippo.
I think all of them. I refuse to, like, acknowledge that they're...
All three of those movies are fun. Yeah. One is fun and also, like, awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. And then two and three are, like... Just
there's still
it's just complicated. Like, you went over the top with the plot that you're like, why do we have all these plot threads going on?
Why is there an election happening?
Applebee's Island.
Applebee's Pirate King.
Captain, I found a whole rat in my Cobb salad. Well, I don't have any other notes. That's anybody else got anything else to add?
Well, I was going to say that they did pitch a Talladega Nights Part 2.
Okay.
A sequel. Where Ricky Bobby drives over to Europe, or drives at Europe.
I'm already in. I'll see it. No.
He drives in Europe, and it was kind of be like an international American driver going to Formula One. But then Adam McKay just, like, decided not to do it, to move on to original ideas.
Right, Step Brothers being the next thing.
Yeah.
I kind of like it, though, that they kind of did, like, in a way, the trilogy, the spiritual trilogy of, like, Anchorman, Talladega Nights, Step Brothers. Mm-hmm. And then you can kind of count the other guys in there as, like, the fourth in that kind of series of Will Ferrell. Will Ferrell didn't write the other guys. That's the only reason I wouldn't count as really part of the trilogy. But, like, of those, like, starring things. And all of them being just insane movies. Yeah. I think Step Brothers probably being the most insane of them all. So we'll have to cover that soon.
Oh. You go. Sorry, I was going to say the DVD commentary.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Go for it. No.
So in the DVD commentary is so funny because it's so just absurd and false. It starts with,
It's
Will riffing. Ferrell states at the beginning, it's 2031 and that Adam McKay has died by being eaten by a shark and that Molly Shannon was a robot the entire time and that they're like... In while they're talking about the commentary that they're on Talladega Nights 9, part 9, and that now Riley is a militia leader who called in from the island state of Michigan. So
I've heard the commentary is just them riffing the whole time.
It's really good.
And
so.
The Blu-ray of this movie came with like all of the first like PS3s.
Yeah.
Ooh. So you got it for free. That's how long ago that was. What were you going to say, Hunter?
Well, Molly Shannon is so funny in this movie.
I forget she's in it. Really,
that's
She introduced, apparently.
She does the whole, like, when Harry met Sally thing.
She introduced John C. Riley to Will Ferrell.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
we've got some
really interesting.
Some jokes that kind of take place in the background that I thought are really good. The when they're doing the wedding photos of Ricky Bobby and his wife.
Yeah.
And the red eye is so terrible in all of the pictures.
That's
really fun. The bar that Will Ferrell is playing, that Ricky Bobby is playing on the arcade at the end, that kind of...
Oh, with Amy Adams. Yeah. We can talk about that. She's in this movie, too.
That bar is called The Unfriendly Possum, which is really just a very good name. And then the book that Jean Giraud is reading while he drives when he's reading a book is The Stranger by Albert Camus, which is...
Wow.
He talks about the French. It's one of the... It's one of the big existentialist books.
Also drinking like a macchiato.
Yes.
Oh, so funny.
We're wrapping up here, Hunter.
Thank you, Hunter, so much for coming on.
This is awesome. Yeah. Really fun.
As a guest on the pod, you do get a gift. And here you go.
It's a bag.
It's a bag?
It is a bag.
Do I talk about what I'm doing?
Yeah,
I'm opening it.
Yeah.
Got opening the bag undone.
He's
on Applebee's coupon.
As a movie about NASCAR drivers, there were a lot of directions to go, but I decided to go with the Fig Newtons.
Yes.
I got a pack of Fig Newtons and a 24 Jeff Gordon car.
Oh, right. Jeff Gordon. Yes.
Jeff Gordon Hot Wheel and Fig Newtons.
Does Jeff Gordon show up in this movie?
I don't.
Maybe he does. He does show up in the movie Looney Tunes Back in Action for a second.
But could have gone with Wonder Bread, could have gone with. you know, all kinds of stuff.
Well, but I'm glad you went the direction that you went.
I thought fig newtons might have been.
I was thinking.
You might have enjoyed the fig newtons.
I was thinking today I could eat a fig newton.
Well, there are other newtons. There we go.
Well, we also put a giant billboard on your car.
I don't know if I knew that until I was looking for those.
Yeah.
I asked the guy, like, where are the fig newtons? And he, like, said here. But it was just, like, newtons, like, fig. And then there's, like, Newton's plane and Newton's other thing. I was like, yeah, there's a bunch. I thought it was Fig Newton. Yeah. I thought that was
the Newton universe.
You didn't look up, and, like, the aisles are, like, soup, bread, Fig Newtons, beer,
oddly enough, no, they were on the bottom soup shelf Newtons. In a small...
Soup Newtons.
Soup Newtons. Soup Newtons.
Well, thanks so much for coming on. It was a blast. Yeah, thanks for listening. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Most Extreme Pod is the handle. And if you have any crying Applebee's stories, email us at mostextremepodcast@gmail.com. Still giving away t-shirts, by the way.
Still giving away the shirts.
We still got t-shirts, so if you want one of those, also email us. And we'll see you next week.
Bye.